Hello and welcome to the Sheffield Libraries podcast. My name is Seanad Myers-Richards and I'm the Lord Mayor of Sheffield this year. I love books and I know the difference they can make to people's health and happiness throughout their lives. I've been reading since I was a little girl and I'm still reading at bedtime now. So I've teamed up with Sheffield Libraries to launch the Lord Mayor's Big Read. In this series of Big Read podcasts, we've invited some well-known Sheffield personalities to chat about the books that they love. I hope you'll enjoy listening, and if you do, share it with your friends. Let us know what you think, and please share your own favourite reads on social media at hashtag ChefReads.
Hello and welcome to the Sheffield Libraries podcast series for the Lord Mayor's Big Read. My name is Liz Chapman and I work for Sheffield Libraries. In this podcast series, we're talking to well-known Sheffielders about some of their favourite and most inspiring reads. In this episode, we're joined by the novelist, academic and all-round literary powerhouse Yvonne Battle Felton. Yvonne's first novel, Remembered, was published in 2019 and she's now working on her second. She also teaches creative writing at Sheffield Hallam University and runs arts events, writing workshops and her own podcast, and we'll be hearing more about some of these projects later. We'd also like to apologise to our listeners for the occasional background traffic noise on this podcast. We recorded this one in the Central Library building, which, as many of you will know, is right in the centre of town. And unfortunately, as you will hear in a moment, a fire engine passed towards the start. However, we hope this won't interfere with your overall enjoyment of the podcast. So Yvonne, we are so delighted and honoured to have you here today. And thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Like, I love talking to you. And I love talking about books and I love libraries. And so I cannot imagine a better way to spend the afternoon.
Fantastic. Well, likewise as well. And I believe that today you have brought along three books that you would like to share with us. So I was just wondering whether you would like to start us off with the first one.
Sure. I think so. My first one would be Their Eyes Were Watching God by Zora Neale Hurston.
That is a wonderful book. I think I read it about 15 years ago, but that for me as well, that has really stayed with me.
You know, it was for me, it was one of those books where I feel like when I guess stumbled upon the book, I was going through a time in my life where things felt out of my control, probably for the first time in like that I could remember. And I was about, I think I was about 17, 18, but my mother had decided when I was 16 that she was moving to Germany and she was moving by herself. And so reading Their Eyes Are Watching God, it reminded me, or I guess it really showed me how sometimes there are people that you love and they can do things that you don't understand, don't like, they might affect you, but they actually have nothing to do with you. It's not your fault.
It must have been such a huge change for you as a young person. And that's an incredibly profound thing to take away from the book, I think.
It was a big change for me because I thought I had my life, planned out and I was going to go from high school and graduate top of my class and then go to university. And I wasn't sure what I was going to do, but I was going to come out rich. But so maybe that was the first, thing that the plan wasn't going to be quite the way I thought it would be. I felt like I needed books to really kind of help me navigate my way back to myself, even though I didn't, necessarily recognize it. But yeah, it gave me so much.
Yes, I think for a lot of those of us who have grown up loving books and books, sometimes they are there for you in hard times when it seems like nothing else is.
That, and for me, I always feel like they make me a better person. So there's something like emotionally, the way that I guess, view the world or experience the world, there's always been a bit of a detachment. And I don't know why it is. I don't know. I mean, for me, that's just like how it's always been. And I feel like books have always been that thing. It's stories really that touch me and help me to kind of navigate that space so I can look at, oh, okay, so this might be how someone else might feel. And this might be how someone else might, you know, respond to that. And they've been really useful as far as like an emotional map for me.
I think books can be an incredibly powerful vehicle for empathy as well. And also it's fascinating reading about other people's lives as well.
And I think sometimes you need that. I know sometimes I need that because it reminds me that so many people and whatever, you know, sort of guise of their day to day, they're going through so many things and you don't know until you pick up that book or you talk to them and ask that question or have that conversation. We make these assumptions, and I think books and stories for me, wherever they are, it reminds me that, you know, don't make these assumptions. You don't know what someone's background is. You don't know the things that they're grappling with. You just don't know. And because, you know, I'm not a psychic, if I don't know, and it's any of my business at all, then I need to ask. But even if I don't ask, I just can't make assumptions.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, that's so true. I was wondering if you could say a little bit about what libraries mean to you, because I think that follows on, I think, in many ways from what we've been touching on here about what one can get from reading.
Yeah, you know what? For me, they've always been that place. I wish it was like you know how some people, they can like pinpoint a memory, and it's the memory of the first time they went into the library or the first time they got their own library card. And I think because my memory has always been unreliable, I don't remember what that first moment was, but I just know libraries have always been a place for me where I felt at home and welcomed and just at peace. And for some of them, you know, you go into a new library and you don't know what's where, and it's kind of exciting because you feel like you're like this explorer and you're going from, you know, room to room or section to section. And then you find something you didn't even know you were looking for. And it might be a book that you read when you were a kid or something that someone recommended or something that just came out, but it speaks to you in terms of the place or the author, just something. It's just one of those places where you come in, sometimes with nothing, something like sometimes emotionally drained, or it's just been a long day, and then you kind of can come out fulfilled. And I love libraries even more now because I see how they're used in all these different ways. So when I was a kid, I went, you know, to get books and to get books that we didn't have to, you know, pay for, and you could keep them for a while and bring them back and get more books. And then when my kids were born, it was always such a big deal for me when they could go and we could go to the library together and get their library card. And it was like their, you know, their little kind of passport into reading. And like they're just so special. And every time we moved to a different place, it would be either getting them a card and getting me a card. Like I have so many library. I feel like I'm a collector now of like library cards.
What a wonderful collection to have.
It really is. It's like all these little places that you can just go. But it's really nice to see the ways that people use it. And I know that part of the reason is because they've been closing up these other services and these other buildings. So it's not necessarily, you know, a happy thing that they're using. But I'm really glad that they have a space that people can go to and you can get information, not just, you know, books, but you can get information on starting a business and information on researching family and information on, you know, archives and a place to really gather and meet people. And it's not a place to that you have to be quiet anymore.
Absolutely. Yes. The library where I work is always full of bustle. It's very heavily used. We've got kids who come in. We've got school classes who come in. We've got older people who come and sit and chat. And I love that. I love that libraries are there for everyone and they're used by so many people in so many different ways.
Yep.
And they're kind of the last remaining indoor warm public space where you can be without having to spend money as well.
Yeah, I remember, so I moved to the UK from Maryland, and I remember 1 year before we moved, there was a big storm in Maryland, and the power was out like around the community. Most of us had lost power. So we didn't have electricity, but it was, so that meant we didn't have, you know, lights, but also meant we didn't have Wi-Fi. So the things that you would usually entertain kids with, and the libraries were open and they had Wi-Fi, and, you know, you could charge your devices, and it wasn't a thing like, you know, people couldn't come in. Everyone was welcome, card, no card, didn't matter. And it was just a way that they were, you know, really supporting the community and providing for us in ways that, you know, you sometimes don't see or take for granted. But yeah, libraries, I think they're becoming just so much more than a place where you go and, you know, read.
We are part of a Warm Spaces project this winter, so that anyone who perhaps can't afford to heat their home, they can come to a warm place, including libraries in Sheffield. So we're really proud to be part of that project, although it's very sad that it needs to exist.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's really sad that it does need to exist, but how wonderful it is that you all are, you know, such a welcoming space, and being able to provide people for with something and a space, a warm, comfortable, welcoming space that it's for the whole family can come. And I think that's such a wonderful thing that you all are doing.
Thank you. That's lovely to hear. And for our listeners, please do come along to the library if you need somewhere to go. You're always welcome at the library.
You know, can I ask, since I have an insider question?
Yes, certainly.
Can you eat in the library?
So it depends on individual libraries. So different libraries do have different rules. So in the library where I work, which is First Park Library, we allow people to eat, but we don't allow hot food because it tends to create smells and potentially a lot of mess.
Okay, that's good to know. So in if in doubt, should we just ask the librarian?
Or... Absolutely, yes. Okay. Yeah.
Because there's been times when I've been working the full day in a library and I'm like, my gosh, I'm starving. And then I'm like looking for it. So if there's a vending machine, I think you can eat there. But then I'm going, if there's not one, I think you can't. But I'm like, I don't know how reliable that is as a science.
Yes, just ask as well, because I know you're not in Sheffield as well. So I can't speak for what they do in, is it West Yorkshire you're in?
So my library is Dewsbury Library.
Yeah.
So I'll ask them the next time I'm there. Yes. Far better than guessing.
It is a problem, though, when you're there all day. It's the same with university libraries, which often have even stricter rules.
That's true. The one thing in most university libraries, I feel like if you can't eat, I have seen people eating in them and people like drinking in them. And I feel like it's either maybe understood that if people are there all day, or accepted that if they're there all day, because it is often for, you know, for some people you go in the day and you don't leave until either the project is done or until, you know, late at night.
Yeah. Anyway, I'll probably cut this section out of the final edit.
I found it really useful.
Well, I'll certainly leave in the bit about the warm spaces.
Yeah.
But just because I don't want to mislead anyone whose library might have different rules from the specific one where I work. Well, it's lovely to hear about how much libraries have meant to you and continue to mean to you. Now, would you like to share your second book with us and tell us why you found that one particularly inspiring?
Sure. You know what? It would be Beloved by Toni Morrison. And I think for me, part of it was it's her writing and like how vividly descriptive, how the characters seem to kind of come to life, and the language and word choice. For me, it was a book that was often more touching even when I read it out loud, because it's kind of how I'm able to hear, you know, the voice in a certain way. And it kind of makes the rhythms a bit more, you know, clear for me, but also the idea that it was this haunting in this relationship of a daughter who, you know, could not forgive her mother for the decisions that the mother made. And then the mother feeling like this is the only way that she could, you know, set her children free was to kill them. And I wonder if for me, like part of that was so like looking back, and I could see it as an adult more than I could at that time, because then when I read it, I was in my early 20s. It was before I moved to Baltimore. I was either in my early 20s or about like 19, but before I moved to Baltimore. So I was still in New Jersey and I had to come back. So I had gone to university for a semester. And I always say like the first thing I learned while I was there was that my full scholarship doesn't actually cover room and board. So it felt like who knew that? Yeah, so I had to come back to New Jersey, because at the time I was the first one to go to university, and no one knew how do you fund, you know, that if the financial aid wasn't going to cover it. So looking at it, I can look at it now and see one reason I might have been drawn to Beloved initially was because it was mothers and daughters, and the decisions that mothers make and the ways that daughters are affected by them, and also might be, you know, angry and hurt and those things. But it was also interesting to me because when I came back, I took a class that was focusing on Black American writers, and I read these amazing books and these amazing stories that were actually all across, you know, America. And in it, there were often these characters who, you know, you grew to like, you grew to love, and they were making these decisions that were based on the circumstances they were in. But also, so even if you look at Beloved and you look at, so the mother kills the babies, but like why was she in that situation? Or she tries to do this, and what put her in that situation? But also all these books, for whatever reason, like thinking about it, I think very few of them took place in Maryland. But for some reason, I was convinced that I needed to move to Baltimore, because mm-hmm. that's where stories happened, and that's where, like, you know, anything was kind of possible. And I convinced a friend to move with me from New Jersey to Baltimore, like based on having read all these books. I cannot say that I told her that it was because I've been reading a lot of books that I was like, Baltimore is a good place to be. But I can say that reading all these books made me think I need to be in Baltimore, and I moved there.
That's really fascinating, because I think Sheffield is perhaps a bit like Maryland in that respect, in that not a great deal of books are set here. Mm. Books that are set in the UK are so often set in London. And that there are a few authors such as Ross Thomas who are writing books set in Sheffield, but really not very many compared with other places. Well, maybe mainly London, to be honest.
And it's, I think that's like, as I grew up in New Jersey, and I'm sure there are books, you know, set there. I feel like I've yet to read one where the character is in. And I grew up in a couple of places in South Jersey, so I feel like there's a lot of options to, you know, to cover some ground there. And but yet I still haven't seen it on the page. I was born in Philadelphia. A lot of writers come from Philly. I can't remember a lot of books set in Philadelphia, though I'm sure there are some. But it was just something about Baltimore. It just seemed like it was turning up. And I don't know if it was like the writers are from there or they were connected to it in some way, but it just seemed like I'm going to write my future and it has to be in Baltimore.
And your own novel, Remembered, has in fact been compared to Toni Morrison's Beloved. So I was wondering if I could tell you if you could tell us a little bit about your own novel.
Sure. So Remembered is the story of a woman whose son has been beaten by police for a crime he may or may not have committed. It was set in 1910 Philadelphia. And Edward has been involved in a streetcar crash where no one was killed, but it was property damage. He was hauled out of the streetcar by a mob and beaten by them and by police. And as he lays in the hospital dying, his mother and also her sister's dead ghost, Tempe, come to the hospital and they tell him stories in order to lead him home. And home is kind of how they might define it. And both of them have different definitions of home anyway, but they also have different definitions of motherhood and kind of the ending that they both would want. So for me, it's a story about family and identity, memory, remembering, and loss. It's also about police violence and stories and the power of stories to kind of create that community and to be that thing that you need. And stories is legacy, the thing that you pass on from one generation to the next. So it kind of was that book that I wanted and needed to read. And it helps me to consider and explore like my role as a mother and my boundaries. A lot of the characters are kind of forced to do these different things based on the circumstances that they're in. And they define motherhood and their boundaries. What are they willing to do to keep their children safe or to get them free or to bring them home in a multitude of different ways? And I really wanted to see stories about the U.S. after the emancipation and to see how families might have reconnected with one another physically, but also emotionally. So for me, it's also a bit of a horror story, because there's nothing more frightening than not knowing that your children are safe and, you know, that they can make their way home. But also, for me, it's really important that every day my kids know that I love them. And so not being able to tell your child that and not being able for them to know and feel it, not being able to protect them, it's all those things that for me make it also not just a ghost story, not just an American story, because it's a story that, I mean, worldwide people are dealing with loss and loss of loved ones. There's oppression around the world. There's slavery and legacies of slavery that touch, you know, all the corners of the earth. And so for me, it's this global story, but at its heart, it's about love.
I love the idea of stories as legacy, because I think we talk a lot, and rightly so, about intergenerational trauma in Black communities. But I think the it's really important to also consider Black joy. And I love the idea of stories as a positive legacy that you hand down.
Yeah, in one way, it's just a special gift to be able to, you know, give stories and memory and all of that. One of the best things I feel like, one of the things I've loved about being a mom has been writing or creating stories for my own kids that either they're the main character or there's a character that they, you know, they like, or maybe it reminds them of someone they know, and being able to kind of navigate this fictional world that they can either impart and, you know, impact the story. So if I can say like, well, what's going to happen next? And they would say, you know, what about if this happens? And then we try to, you know, make a story about that. It's just something so very special to be able to do with and for them. And I feel like I want that for everyone. I think everyone deserves to see themselves reflected on the page, and but also on the stage and, you know, like around the literary and creative world.
Absolutely. On that note, do you think you might write a children's book one day?
You know, I have written, so I've written 6 titles for the Penguin Random House Ladybird series, and those are rewritings of myths. So they're creative nonfiction. So they're not like my stories, but I got to research them and to rewrite them for contemporary audiences. And then I'm also writing a children's adventure, a middle grade adventure, because I love the idea of characters who get to be villains. And so this one, he's a supervillain, and he comes from a family of supervillains. And it's kind of what might happen if his supervillain mom decides she's going to be a superhero. And so I'm writing that to kind of see what might happen next. And I'm also having fun with it. And we'll just kind of see what happens.
That sounds amazing. I love the twist of the mom deciding she wants to become a superhero. That's great. I wasn't expecting that to be where it might go, but that's so fun. Also, moms very rarely get to be villains at all.
You know, moms very rarely get to be alive in some stories. Yeah. Like if it's a Disney one, she'd be dead by now. And in so many stories, the parents are either somewhat absent, and she won't be the star because it's going to be, you know, it's for middle grade. It's going to be for kids. But also, I don't want her to have to die in order for him to live, and in order for him to, you know, live his life and have his best dreams, you know, or whatever. His mother doesn't have to die for that.
Absolutely, yes. That is such a heavily used trope, and I would like to see more books without it, I must admit.
I must admit that I would too. I don't know if it's just because I'm a mom, but I'm going, like, why do I have to die for them to, like, you know, have their dreams come true, or, you know, do whatever? Like, are we really standing in the way of someone's dreams? And is the only way to move this person a funeral? So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
I'm very excited about that, so I shall look out for it.
Thank you.
Would you like to share your next book with us and explain why you have chosen it and how it's inspired you?
Sure. So, you know, it's this one was, I think, the hardest because, and even in the end, I still cheated. So I'm using both A Wrinkle in Time and A Swiftly Tilting Planet. And I feel like if I say them really quickly, then it's like one book. And I think for me, it was just that imagination. And kind of when I read them as a kid, I was one of those readers who could read myself into any story. So I was the main character, or, you know, the main villain. I was soaring through the air on a Pegasus. I was traveling through time and having all these adventures. It really wasn't until I was an adult trying to read these books to my own children that I realized that actually we weren't in these books at all. It was like a line in one of the books where it was like, and so-and-so, the black boy, did something, something. And I was like, oh my gosh, like I hadn't realized that level of absence. And then this character did nothing else throughout, but in that one page, he was black. And I don't even think he lived beyond that page, or he wasn't mentioned again. And I knew, like, when I was trying to read that book, that I had loved and felt so welcomed and so embraced in that book that had showed me that, you know, you can do so many things and it's just up to your imagination. And reading it to my kids and being like, wow, like, not only was it not, you know, you weren't even imagined in this book with, you know, unicorns and talking animals and all these things, like, as a people, black people weren't really, like, imagined in it. And so I think what that had done as a kid, it inspired me to read, because again, I was one of those kids, I was already in the book, so I didn't even notice it. But as an adult, it inspires me to write, because I don't need to rewrite that book. That book is, you know, it's fine what it is. It's, she wrote it for who she wrote it for. It was inspired by her own family. And so, like, great. But for me, like, I need to do one so that my kids, and my kids are older now, but and as I, you know, either as they have children or as my nieces and nephews have children and all of that, as more generations are born, I want them always to know that I loved them and that I could imagine them and that I'm writing for them. So I am writing stories where children of color are the main characters, and they can be villains and they can be superheroes, but they can also climb mountains or actually do absolutely nothing at all, you know, but play video games and have a good time and be good friends or be bad friends. I want that for every kid. I definitely want it for mine.
And it's so fantastic that now we are finally starting to see books coming through for all ages that do have black kids and other children of color as central characters, but also where the color of their skin is not always the issue that the entire book has to center around.
Exactly, because there are so many rich experiences. And that, I think that's one thing that I like about even the book that I'm writing. It has absolutely nothing to do with them being black. Like, that's not going to be that's not why she wants to be a villain. It's not why she wants to be a hero. Throughout their day to day, their main thing, they're a family. And they want to have fun. They want to take over the world. Like, you know, who doesn't want to take over the world? And so, like, all these different things. But yeah, it's not about them having necessarily problems with, I guess, the problems that people deal with on a regular basis. So there's not going to be police violence in my book. They're not going to be oppressed. There's not going to be racism probably in the book. I say probably because, one, I'm still writing it, but also because, so right now that's not the focus, but it's also character driven. So with the characters, where the characters lead is where it's going to go. But yeah, so there's so much that they can do, and the color of their skin is not going to be the main driver of their book or their story. Just like it's not of, you know, your life, ideally, but of course that depends on where you are and the circumstances that you can control, but also the circumstances that you can't control.
Absolutely. But none of us live single issue lives. So everyone has something else going on in their life, don't they? Yes.
Exactly. There's so many roles that make up an individual, so many selves, you know, that make up who you are.
It's so interesting what you say about not having noticed an absence for ages, though. Because when I was doing my PhD research, which was about LGBTQ provision in public libraries, I was reading about in the 80s and 90s, we had a law in the UK called Section 28, which prohibited schools from teaching about homosexuality as an inverted commas pretended family relationship. And so it was never mentioned in school. And I was doing my research, sitting there thinking, gosh, it must have been terrible to be one of those queer kids growing up under Section 28. And it took me literally months before one day I thought, but that was me. I was that kid, and I never noticed it at the time, because you don't, like you say, you don't notice an absence.
No, I think when there's an absence, sometimes you fill that space with your own imagination. And so I remember reading books where so-and-so flicked their blonde hair and like batted their blue eyes. And I just thought, wow, this poor writer cannot spell like brown. Like, and I completely ignored it. Like sometimes I like didn't even see it. Like, you know how you can just gloss over it and you just insert yourself there. It's funny, I do remember something. I was older though, and somebody was trying to say that like the default, and this was like an adult that was saying, it was kind of like the use of the word him when they meant everyone, that they used him. And I'm going, they can't spell everyone. Like, so why does it say, and I was always like when it comes to religion, I've always been kind of, I want to say argumentative. So I'm like, well, if the Bible says like, he should do this, and he should do that, I'm like, well, that's what whoever wrote it meant. Like they just meant that's the law for he and him. Like that, what does that have to do with me that he can't do that? Like maybe he can't covet his neighbor, but I can. Like, but I think just in reading as a kid, I guess I was a more generous or forgiving imaginative reader, because yeah, I was just, if it wasn't me, it was still me. Whereas as an adult, I'm like, I am not editing your work for you. So if you've cut everyone out, then you've cut everyone out. But surely you don't expect me to buy a story that doesn't include different experiences, or to even pay for it in time, than not just in money. So I think definitely more and more people's stories getting out, whether they're published traditionally or self-published or online or in, you know, a zine, whatever it is, like the more stories that we read about, the more varieties, the better I think we'll all be.
I completely agree, absolutely. So as well as being a writer and an academic, you also run a lot of literary events, and particularly with a view to supporting diverse voices. And in November, you are running a project called If These Walls Could Talk as part of the Being Human Festival. So I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about that.
It's one of my favorite projects, I think. So This one is aimed at Black women over 40. And we're going to, in my head, I'm calling it like a museum takeover. I haven't called it that to the museum though, but it's going into we're going into Weston Park, and we're going to take a tour. So we'll walk around the space. And while we're there, we're looking at representation, we're looking at narratives. So like, whose stories are there? What do they say? What do they suggest? But then also whose stories are not there? And kind of how is your story represented in this space, and what stories does it tell of you? And then once we've gone through the collection and maybe played with some of the archives and reflected, so we'll have an opportunity to reflect on what we see, but also how do you feel about what you see and what you don't see? And then we're going to write, so people might write about their experiences of that museum, what they're looking for, what they would like to see, what their own museum might look like. And we're going to do that using poetry, creative nonfiction, so personal essays, and also fiction. And so at the end of it, participants will have a chance to perform their piece for the public. So that part would be, it's a free public reading. And to participate in the workshop, that's also free. We're providing lunch. And I really want people to come and explore the library with, I'm sorry, the museum, with a view of, am I here? Am I in this space? And I know part of my reason for wanting to do it is when you go through some museums, the experience that they have reflected of like the Black experience, if there is no the Black experience, because there's such a variety of experiences. When I go, I often either see slavery and legacies of slavery, or I see music and sports, and I look at it and I think, well, so what are we telling people? What's possible if you are a young Black person or an older Black person? Like, what story are we telling of you? And there are so many, you know, varied stories, and we just don't see that. So I think this is kind of that intervention and a chance for us to write about some of those stories. And so it could be anything. People might be inspired to, you know, to write themselves into a painting, or to write themselves into a landscape or an object, and just to explore. So I'm really looking forward to it. I always find it really encouraging to be around people and to just reflect and write and to talk and then to share what we write. It's the workshops are free. We're going to record the performances, and for that it's that legacy. And so I'd like there to be a it'll respond to both like an installation at the museum, but also a digital one. And so that people who are not there for the performance, they can listen to it. They can, you know, use their phone and you see the QR code and use that to go and hear the story online. It's just as a way to kind of talk back with, or talk with people who aren't there in the space, but it is about that legacy of stories.
That sounds absolutely fantastic. And will the outputs from that project then be incorporated into the museum's collection afterwards to sort of go some way towards filling that gap?
That's what I'm hoping will happen. I'm also hoping that it's going to be part of that, because right now, I think when those conversations happen about what these experiences will look like, with that, I don't necessarily think that communities are often involved in that process of curating stories. And so this is a chance, one, for communities to curate our own stories, and then also to engage with the museum to say, well, so these are some of the stories that we'd like to see. And ideally that opens that dialogue with the museum as well, who can now go back to the communities and say, so are we getting this right? What can we do? How can we curate and co-curate with you instead of kind of at or to or for you? So how can we engage communities in this process?
That sounds absolutely amazing. And I believe you're part of the project that's aimed specifically at Black women over 40, is that right?
That's right. And so I think there are, sometimes there's a lot of things for young people. And I feel like sometimes people who are over whatever other people consider young don't necessarily have these same opportunities. So because I'm a Black woman over 40, I felt like, why not? And so, and why, there's something about doing projects and making them widely available for all age groups. And so I think there are people who are already doing things for young people and people who are already doing things for like kids. And I just wanted to do an event or do a project for older people where they knew that not only are you welcome, but I'm doing this for you.
Excellent. I love that. I'm not a Black woman over 40, but I am a woman over 40, and it is a strange limbo sort of period almost.
I think so too, because in some things you're invisible and in other things you're highly visible, but do you like the representations that other people have of you? And for me, projects like this are a chance to really challenge that representation and to create our own representation, and using stories to do that, I think it's such a powerful thing.
It is, and it's having that agency to speak and have your voice heard as well.
Exactly.
So if any of our listeners want to sign up for that project, how would they do that?
So you can go right to Eventbrite. And if you search for If These Walls Could Talk, it should come right up. And then if not, they can always email me. They can contact me through Sheffield Hallam University. And it's just, I want to say it's like letter Y dot battle hyphen Felton at shu.ac.uk. But they could either email me or go through Eventbrite.
Okay, that's wonderful. Thank you. And so if people want to find out more about your other work and buy your book, could you tell our listeners where would be the best place to go to do that?
Yes. So I feel like I'm all over social media, and I do a lot of projects, like you said. So a True Story Open Mic Night in Dewsbury. I'm starting a draft night in Sheffield, where writers can come and they can read 3 to 5 minutes of their work in progress that's kind of close or ready to be, you know, sent out for publication. And that's once a chance for writers to meet agents and publishers and also potential readers and other writers and really build that sense of community. So I'm on Twitter, I'm on Instagram and Facebook. And as far as buying the books, you could try your local independent bookstore. Or you can try, of course, it's on Amazon and it's on online and offline. You could go to the publishers and they'll have links to different publishers, I'm sorry, to different bookstores. And you could also take it out from your library.
Yes, so, we do, of course, have copies of your book. And we also have copies of all the other books that you have spoken about today. So to any listeners who are feeling inspired and fancy reading one of the books that Yvonne has spoken about, just pop down to your local library where you will be able to pick it up for free. And I should also say that Yvonne's draft workshop will also be taking place at Sheffield Library. So do have a look at our event right nearer the time.
And I should say they're free too. So it will be free. We'll have light refreshments and everyone will be welcome. And even if you aren't a writer or you don't have, you know, something that you're ready to share, I would encourage people to come just to, you know, to get to know each other, but also to support the people who are going to be reading that night.
I'm just going to redo that book because I realized it was my phone that was going off. I had no idea why it was doing it. And so I naturally assumed it wasn't mine. And then I looked at it and it said, "You've typed your password incorrectly 4 times.
Oh, no.
Which I had done just because I had my hand on it.
The alarm? So it went off thinking,
yes,
you were in distress.
I didn't even know it did, yeah, an alarm. So I'm really sorry about that.
No,
so I'm just going to go back and say, so of course, we do have copies of Yvonne's book in Sheffield libraries. So you are able to borrow it from us for free. Although, of course, we do encourage you to buy your own copy as well. It is fantastic. And we also have copies of all the other books that Yvonne has spoken about today. So if you are feeling inspired to pick up one of those books, just pop down to your local library. And I should also say that Yvonne's draft night will also be taking place at Sheffield Libraries. So look out on our Eventbrite for that appearing soon.
And just a reminder that if you do, whether you have a work in progress to pitch or to share, please do come along. You can support other writers, you can meet people, and you can just really have a nice time and get comfortable talking about your work or listening to other people talk about their work.
Lovely, thank you so much. And yes, thank you very much for joining us today, Yvonne. It has been absolutely wonderful chatting to you and hearing about your favorite reads.
Thank you for having me. It's been such a pleasure, and it was a joy to talk about the books that I love, and hopefully people will love them just as much as I did.
Thank you so much.